Hello, I'm Richard Adey. This is Best Practice. This week, you'll meet the chief executive of the largest local government area in Australia. It's vast, bigger than Victoria, and Alan Cooper has been running it since 1998. Let's begin with something that's been in the news lately. Robots, artificial intelligence, automation, you've probably seen the headlines about humans being superseded in the workplace and the end of work. But Jeff Borland doesn't think so. The Professor of Economics at the University of Melbourne believes those predictions of doom and gloom are wrong.
Well, I guess we take several perspectives on it. First of all, just looking at the data, you can look at things in Australia like the total amount of hours worked per capita in Australia going back to the mid-1960s. And if you do that, it's pretty much a straight line. There's certainly no evidence that the amount of work available to the Australian population has decreased since the mid-1960s, and certainly no sign that it's decreased with the increased use of IT computer-type technology since the mid-1990s. The other data-based perspective you can take is to look at the amount of churning that's happening in the labour market. A claim that's also often made about new technologies is that they're causing a faster pace of change in the labour market. But if you look at indicators, for example, like job tenure, the amount of time people have been in their current jobs, there's no sign that the proportion of people who've been in jobs for short periods of time, less than a year, is increasing. In fact, what you do observe is that the proportion of people who've been in jobs for a long time, more than 10 years, has increased pretty consistently since the early 1980s, driven mainly by with females being increasingly engaged in the labour market, a much larger proportion of females being in their jobs for 10 years or more. So one way you can think about tales of the death of work is to look at the data, look at what's been happening in the Australian labour market since the larger scale adoption of IT, computer-based technology since the mid-1990s. And when you do that, there's no sign that the total amount of work is decreasing. There's no sign that the pace of change in the labour market is getting more rapid.
There must have been, though, productivity gains in specific sectors, which now need many fewer people to do actually more than they were doing before.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So by saying that the total amount of work hasn't changed, of course, we're not arguing that new technologies don't have any effect on the labour market. Of course, new technologies, and it's been a consistent story since the Industrial Revolution, new technologies do destroy some types of jobs. But the other part of the story is that new technologies also create new jobs. They do that in a couple of ways. First of all, as you mentioned, new technologies increase our productivity. They enable us to produce the existing set of goods and services we consume with less labour. That represents an increase to us in our real incomes. And what's happened with new technologies up until now is that people find ways that they want to spend that extra real income. They buy more of the existing products, they buy new products. Often those new products have also been created by the new technologies. And of course, then that creates an offsetting increase in the demand for labour. It's also the case that while new technologies reduce demand for some types of labour, they're complementary to other types of labour. So with computers and IT, the general perception is that what they do is they've increased the demand for workers with cognitive, what are often sort of the ability to do cognitive, non-routine type tasks. The other aspect that's really important is that, of course, we as humans have adapted or changed as technologies change. So one thing that's happened in the Australian labour market since the early 1980s is a huge increase in the proportion of people with university degrees. So that proportion of people with bachelor's degrees has gone from about 5% in the early 1980s to 30%. What that means is that we have a much larger proportion of the workforce today who are able to work productively with the new technologies.
Because of the changes that especially ICT has brought, it's not the same everywhere, is it? It creates winners and losers. It affects different parts of Australia, different regions, but also different sectors in terms of and different educational levels. So it's not the same everywhere. For some people, it's a boon. For some, it's terrible.
That's right. And that's always been the story of technological change. Technological change creates losers and creates winners. Workers for whom the demand for labour is decreased by new technologies lose directly from the new technologies, but other workers where the new technology increases demand for the skills they have gain. That's really been the story of new technologies for as long as new technologies have been being created. If you go back to the Industrial Revolution, for example, look at what happened to handloom weavers when you had the new technologies for cotton production. Basically, that occupation was wiped out and their wages were reduced by a quarter because of the new technology. So yeah, new technology clearly has distributional consequences, and so it's obviously important for economic policy to facilitate new technologies being used, because it's going to make us more productive and make us better off. But it's also really important for policy to address the distributional consequences of new technology, to try to make sure that people who are displaced because of new technologies have opportunities to regain employment, retrain, and so on. That's not something I think have generally done well in Australia in the past. It's also really important to have a strong social safety net for people who are losing out because of changes in technology.
Jeff, what about the pace of change? You have already mentioned it, but I mean, you can easily read, I've read many times, that my phone has more computing power than NASA took to send men to the moon. That's an astonishing change, and it must be almost unprecedented in history.
Well, it may be unprecedented in terms of computing capacity or measures like that, but I guess that's just one aspect of the economy. If you think back to times, for example, the introduction of electricity, mass electrification of homes and businesses, the impact on the ability of businesses to apply power in production is comparable back in the sort of 1920s, 1930s, and so on, is comparable to what we're observing sort of with communication and computing today. Light is another, if you go back hundreds of years and think about what was required sort of to provide a particular amount of light compared to what's required to provide the same amount of light today, that's on a similar proportion to the sort of changes we observe in things like ability to store data. So I think sometimes we focus on those aspects in society and the economy where change is occurring most rapidly. And we sort of think of that then as describing the whole of our whole of our experience, but it's not. And there've been lots of times in the past when there've been technologies which also in particular parts of society and the economy have been as transformative.
So why is that such a, I suppose, a widely held view that more or less that we live in a special time, a unique time?
Well, I can't claim that I know the answer for sure. We speculate in the research that we've done that maybe there are sort of various biases we have as humans that predispose us to believe that change is happening more rapidly today than in the past. One of the ideas we suggest is this idea, a bias that to feel that we live in special times. So the idea that sort of
because it makes us special, doesn't it? I mean, that's part
of it. An unawareness of history. Sort of, I guess it makes sense to kind of think that you appreciate change that you're experiencing. Sort of, you may be more sensitive to it than hearing about things that happened in the past. As you said, maybe it makes us feel more special as well to feel that we live in these times. The other thing we suggest is that bias is being fed in various ways. So I always joke that if I was to write a book, I don't think anyone would want it because it would have the title of things are just the same. Whereas if you have a book that, you know, robots are taking our jobs, you know, the death of work, then you're more likely to catch attention and sell books. I think, you know, if you're a politician, it's good to claim that you've got, you know, larger, more substantial problems to solve than have existed in the past. Perhaps consulting firms sort of have an incentive to claim that businesses are faced by pressures on a scale that they've never faced before, so that you really need to buy our services because we can help you solve your problems. So we speculate that maybe there's this bias and it's fed in various ways.
If we don't live in special times, by that definition, what are, I suppose, the key concerns or challenges facing the Australian workforce? If it's not about the robots are coming and AI is coming to take our jobs, what should we be concerned about?
Well, I think we should be concerned about AI and technology. We shouldn't be concerned that AI and technology are about to cause the death of work. We shouldn't be concerned that it's causing a pace of change in the labour market that's more rapid than the past. But we should be concerned, first of all, that we provide an environment where the new technologies can be used, because that's going to raise productivity and real income. But we also should be concerned because new technologies do cause winners and losers, and that the current big source of winners and losers is the introduction of IT computer-based technologies. So we should really be worrying about the workers who are seeing a reduction in demand for their skills because of these new technologies. So we should worry about them, but we should worry about them in the right way.
Jeff, it's been very interesting to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Richard.
Jeff Borland's Professor of Economics at the University of Melbourne. This is Best Practice on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Adie.